Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we have the good fortune to be joined by Pierre Farragut of New Street Research to talk about Tesla. Hey, Pierre.
Hey, Rob. Nice. Well, thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. Always good to chat with you. So we've got quite a few topics to go through today. We're going to talk a little bit about Q3 earnings, of course, what's been going on with the stock since then, and Tesla Insurance. I know you asked on the call about that. FSD beta, since we last talked, that's started to roll out a little bit more. So we've got quite a bit to talk about. And of course, you just increased your price target as well. So New Street Research now still with the buy rating on the stock and a $1,298 price target, pretty close to the highest on the street. So yeah, Pierre, welcome and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me. And it's always a pleasure. And thanks for showing like the public domain price targets that that we've had on the stock over time. As you show that, I'd like to just take an opportunity to make a couple of quick clarifications. So the first time is that, of course, like past performance doesn't indicate anything but future performance. And my role as an equity analyst is very regulated, and I'm very happy that you refer to past price targets, but that's not something I would do myself for obvious reasons. And then the second thing I'd like to highlight as well is that in my role as an analyst, I speak to institutional qualified investors, and I can make investment recommendations to these guys. But I am, of course, not authorized to do that for the more general public. So we'll have a great conversation. I'll tell you that our work, our research, how we set our price targets. But none of my comments should be understood by the audience as research, as investment recommendations per se, of course.
Sure. So all that being said, what was your kind of reaction to Q3? It's been kind of a wild couple of months here for Tesla.
Yeah. So I mean, our reaction was, of course, very much reflected in the increase in our price target. So that quarter was very, very encouraging, mostly on two fronts. The first one is, and they're closely related. The first one is gross margin. So if you recall our last conversation, we were thinking Tesla could hopefully get to 30% gross margin in 2025. And that's something that really justified a very significant hike in our price targets back maybe in June or in May of last year of 2020. And we had that target like for like in multiple years from now. And now what we see is that Tesla is almost there. If you adjust for a couple of moving parts, in particular the fact that the Model S and Model X are still very small in the mix, they're almost there. That's fairly impressive. And in addition to that, management made relatively straightforward comments on the call that margin should continue to improve and to expand. And so that's a pretty amazing position to be. So there is no like massive contribution of FSD. There is no like special software or subscription or insurance revenues boosting. Tesla is just selling cars, and on the business of selling cars with a very small scale, with very competitive prices, they are actually leading the industry by a margin on profitability. It's the best proof that they don't have any competition. And then the second thing that was very encouraging and interesting is that one could have like near-term concerns about Tesla's ability to deliver and to pull together these cars given all the supply constraints. But their trajectory really shows that being small, being agile, being lean, being integrated gives them like a massive advantage in today's world. Having also a very simple bit with less chips, like more concentrated electronic design gives them an advantage. And we felt the situation is still uncertain and it's going to be difficult, but Tesla is extremely well positioned to weather the storm and go through the supply constraints very successfully. So the combination of the two things means we do think Tesla is going to continue to deliver strong quarters and actually beat earnings expectations. And so the way we look at Tesla is that up to 2025, the company will keep this extremely strong growth outlook. So growing vehicle shipments 50% per annum, we don't think that's a story that tails off in 2025. It keeps going after that with like the introduction of a lower ASP model. And on top of that, you have relays of growth in the energy business, of course, that we think are very significant. So when you look back at the stock over the last couple of years, it has been trading on a 50 to 100 times kind of range on forward earnings. So 50 to 100 times what Wall Street consensus expects for the next year. And of course, like anyone active on Wall Street, computers all see that, and that becomes a very strong reference point. So the way we think about our price target, which is a one-year price target, is really, you know, where is consensus going to be for the year after next in a year from now? And will the stock still trade within that range? And so, and we usually take 75 to be like in the middle of the range. And if sentiment is very strong, it's trading at 100 times. That's what's happening now. And if it's more concerned, it's going to trade at 50 times. So there is always like this plus minus, you know, 50, 100% move that can happen in the stock price based on how strong the outlook is. But that's the feeling we have, that in a year from now, the outlook should be good, at least good. So 75 times in a year from now will be at the end of 2022. So we would be looking at how the stock trades on 2023 earnings. And then we'll keep moving up like that year after year. So you reread people talking about, like Katie talking about like multiple thousands of dollars price targets and things like that. This is like actually very similar to our price target, because we publish a one-year target and not like a five-year out target. And as our framework, we think is going to be very stable for the next 5 years. So if you increase your price target by 40 to 50% every year to reflect 40 to 50% increase in actual earnings, that comes from 50% increase in car shipments, which is probably what we would expect. If you compound that, of course, the stock can more than triple over a five-year horizon from the kind of levels we see here. So like we are still very, very excited about that long-term opportunity. And when we downgrade our position, when we recommend to, we present like a more neutral view on the name, here again, there is no immediate investment recommendation you can read in that. But what it means is that we feel like the stock is more on the higher end of its range in terms of how it's trading than the lower end. And so it's more a way for us to describe to our clients the fact that on a shorter term horizon, like plus minus, let's say 1 year or plus minus 6 months, there is less steam in the engine looking forward and looking backward. And so with that in mind, you know, that's how we react to Q3.
Yeah, that's all super fascinating. And as you're saying that, I'm kind of just sitting here thinking like, well, wait a second, if the forward multiple stays the same and Tesla keeps growing earnings at, you know, 50% a year, which is probably relatively conservative given their targets of wanting to grow deliveries at that rate, plus, as you mentioned, the energy business and, you know, whatever happens with software and things like that, you'd think earnings would grow at a little bit faster of a rate. And if that multiple stays the same, then the stock is just gonna, you know, continue to grow at 50, 60% a year from where we're at already, which is, you know, over $1 trillion market cap now. So it's really interesting to hear, you know, kind of how some people are thinking about that and where that could eventually then lead if that does end up holding.
Mm-hmm. And it's always a bit scary. So to see, like, the $1 trillion mark was scary when the stock was trading on a few hundreds of billions. And now the multi-trillion dollar mark is scary now that the stock is trading on a trillion. And we use other like reference points to kind of like check to at least try and figure out first that we are like in a bubble, kind of bubble cognitive framework. And so here's the thing is that if you take like a very, very like deep step back and look at Tesla, and try and think about where is Tesla going to be in 10 years, the easiest compare is actually Apple. So Apple was 10 years ago a company like Tesla, very early in very completely redefining a category, a product, and capturing the lion's share of profits in the industry segments. upward and downward, like across the value chain against competitors, like all the profit of the smartphone business, like the vast majority of them fall into the pocket of Apple. And Tesla is doing the same in the car industry. And the car industry today is about, if I recall correctly, 20 times the mobile phone industry in 2007 when Apple came up with the iPhone. Okay, so 20 times Apple gives you quite a bit of room for maneuver. So that's reassuring. And then, as you said, we do firmly believe into Tesla's future beyond beyond cars. Like getting the car right is going to be like, you know, what the iPhone is for Apple. That's going to be the source of most of the profits. But the future beyond the car is actually very very significant. The competitive advantages Tesla are building today, if we talk about batteries a bit later, I'll come back to that, are going to be absolutely key and fundamental in the way they can compete in the broader energy spectrum. And in our research this year, like clean energy, the transition to renewable energy has become the number one theme. We think we are actually going through an inflection point at the moment. You have a lot of factors accelerating deployment of renewable energy, like their cost competitiveness, like the political support, the monetary environment. Everything is very supportive of that. And it's going to take years before it becomes really significantly tangible for Tesla. But we're still very, very strongly convinced the company is very, very well positioned to lead there as well.
Yeah, that completely makes sense. And I agree. You mentioned batteries. So let's talk about 4680s. Obviously, we're getting close to being on the verge of Tesla, you know, starting production beyond just the pilot plants there in Fremont. What are your thoughts as we kind of get into that period?
Yeah, so very, very excited first to see that the project is much, much more advanced today than I thought it would be a year ago. They've been moving very fast. If you think about like the very tangible elements you have on that, so they are producing in very large volume the 4680 already. They have a battery pack. They've manufactured the battery pack. The battery pack is in cars. And cars are running around with a 4680. So they are not selling them yet, but they are running around with it. So the last innings of really ramping the technology and the new form factor are, I think, almost fully de-risked in terms of the battery coming to fruition. Like the battery does exist. The only risk that remains is actually a risk on timing. You know, it could be on the road in 3 months, it could be on the road maybe in 9 months, like, and that's like a kind of 6 months. So in the greater scheme of things, you don't care about the 6 months because nobody is running after them. Now, in terms of, you know, ramping up production in Berlin and in Austin and things like that, it's a bit complicated to manage because you need to be able to ramp a factory, not being 100% sure you'll have enough of the new batteries to produce a car. So what Tesla, in my understanding, is doing is being able to ramp Berlin and Austin with car that will have like some today's battery pack, and we'll be able to move to like the more advanced architecture and the more advanced battery pack as soon as it happened. But it's fairly exciting to think that it's going to happen this year. Now, what I find the most interesting is a broader strategy Tesla is deploying in battery with the 4680. And that's something that reminds me of the work I did on Samsung, like almost 20 years ago, maybe 15 years ago. And I call that at the time, like the development of an integrated dominant business model. So integrated dominant means you vertically integrate yourself to sell the end product and secure the key components of your system. And by doing that, you put yourself in a position of having like the best product because you control very well innovation and product design and things like that. But at the same time, as the industry is going to mature, the design between manufacturers is going, like differentiation is going to dissipate, and your advantage of being integrated is going to become like a liability, because those who are disintegrated will benefit from better economies of scale at every horizontal layer of the industry. So if you are like an integrated PC manufacturer today, good luck. You have to buy like a $25 billion fab to do chips, and then you'll have only a small market share to pay down that. But and others are buying chips from Intel, who has a 85% market share, and they have much better economics than you, so you disappear. So you can't remain integrated without doing anything. And as your industry is evolving, what you need to do is to build on key horizontal, on key horizontals, dominant positions as well. And that's what Samsung did historically in memory. Samsung is dominant in memory. They're almost dominant in logic chips. I mean, they're second to TSMC, but they are like more than a third of the size of TSMC. So they're very, very comparable to TSMC in terms of scale, even if they've not been as successful commercially. And then they dominate the display market as well. So all the key components of a mobile phone, they've secured actually their horizontal domination as well as their vertical integration. And so that's what Tesla is doing. I don't know if they conceptualize it the same way, but that's definitely what they're doing with the 4680. Because what they're doing first is creating a scope, a scale, an inside, in-house scale that will beat anybody else. So they will have the largest factories. But at the same time, I know from very, very, very high quality sources that today, Tesla is actively engaging with battery manufacturers, asking them, number one, to do the 4680, giving them all what they need for them to do it, and committing to buy all volumes without any restriction at the right price. So they are building the larger scale in-house. They are dragging their competitors into a similar form factor so that Tesla becomes the industry standard. And within that standard, they are going to capture all the largest volumes because they are going to be at the same time the largest manufacturer and the largest buyer. So anyone competing with Tesla needing a battery will have to buy a 4680 at a significant premium on what Tesla pays internally for it, because they will have the largest contracts with manufacturers and they will have the largest manufacturing capability in-house. So that's a very, very beautiful integrated dominant model. And so the least thing I'm concerned about is like the gross margin of Tesla on battery systems, on battery packs, on power walls and things like that, because they will have like this industrial advantage that is like 10, 15 years in the making, and that will be like indestructible in the future. So that part of the story I find very exciting. It's still very, it's not something you're going to see. You're going to see like impacting the news flow or numbers in the short term. But in 2025, the reason why you'll see us claiming that Tesla will maintain a significant margin gap against other car manufacturers, a lot of that will come from what they're doing today in the battery space.
Oh, man, Pierre, you're like blowing me away right now. This is so fascinating because we talk so much about like the vertical integration of Tesla, but how you've put it with the horizontal integration too, or the, you know, just those layers there is, for me, kind of makes it click of like, okay, we've already known that, yes, Panasonic, CATL, LG are working on 4680s, but it's been kind of an open question about exactly what Tesla is sharing there. But when you frame it this way, it makes so much more sense. And what you're talking about, the price differences there, I'm assuming what you're saying there is because batteries are going to be supply constrained. So others that want these batteries are just going to have to come into the market for the small amount of supply that Tesla isn't absorbing. And then kind of outbid each other for access to those batteries. Is that kind of what you're getting across there?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's like a game theory kind of, you know, running scenarios about, imagine your CATL and Tesla is telling you about that. So you know the form factor of Tesla is going to be the largest volume because Tesla is doing it. You know the probability it's a bad form factor is fairly low because Tesla designed it. And you know that Tesla is telling everybody, build as much as you can, and I'll buy it from you at the right price, which means like at very, very low margins for you guys. Then you have a choice. Either you decline, and then you're putting yourself out of the game, or you move first thinking, well, my best chance here is to move faster than my competitor to build the scale I need with Tesla, to be best positioned to defend my earnings power with other manufacturers. So you've already created a frame, like a market structure in which Tesla is not paying the premium others are paying. And the reason why you do business with Tesla is to make you capable of charging a decent premium with others. And as all your competitors are going to do the same, like all the margins of the industry cannot be competed away. They can be concentrated on the back of some of the buyers, but they cannot be competed away. And that's what Tesla is masterminding at the moment.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
At least in my opinion.
Right, right. And I think that, you know, based on the evidence that we have out there, that structure kind of makes sense. So yeah, yes. That's really interesting, and it will be interesting to follow that. So we mentioned software too. Last time we talked, the beta, I think, was maybe in very limited number of people externally to Tesla. Obviously now they've started to expand that. I don't know what your experience has been with the beta. I'm sure you've seen some of the videos and things like that. What are your thoughts so far?
So first of all, I'm very upset with the beta because I started with a terrible score and I'm like crumbling back up trying to get it. And I still feel very far away. So I'm like, I'm very upset. My first thing I have to say is I'm very upset. Elon, if you listen to that, I'm very upset. I didn't get how you would keep like a good score, and I overstopped on stop signs and things like that, which destroyed my score instead of improving. I mean, I've been like making a lot of fun of myself in the last few weeks. So that's my impression number one. Impression number two is, so what's very interesting here is that, first of all, if you think about like the group of like bulls on Tesla, I am kind of the bear on FSD. I don't really have that in my numbers before 2025 as a significant moving back. I do not believe in the robot taxi opportunity. I think it's never going to happen. And I grow more convinced here by the day. But I still find what's happening absolutely fantastic, because today Tesla has the largest installed base of cars driving around, the largest like kind of like the chic term of the moment is data lake of information they can put in. It's a very lively data lake. It's a data torrent more than a data lake, where they can pick information to refine their models. They've gotten like so advanced in the understanding that it's all about the size and throughput of your compute, high performance compute systems that drives the speed at which you can improve your technology. And it's all about also building armies of very advanced talents who are capable of deeply understanding how you can influence and improve a very complex model. They've invested into like leading edge semiconductor technology to create like an exaflop computer that is going to be extremely efficient, and they're going to be able to have 10 of them if they want. So they're building a platform that tells me one thing, which is that they will always have the best driving assistant technology in the industry. And now I think maybe others will be able to have like to be playing in the same league, like, you know, with like Mobileye and probably only Mobileye, but no more than that in terms of, you know, having a technology that can go into a passenger car, a car that sells for $30,000, et cetera, et cetera. So that's like a very good like long-term life insurance for the profitability of Tesla. It's always going to differentiate itself massively, even for Apple, that still has the potential to become a powerful force in the car market. I think catching up on that part of the story is going to be challenging, I think. So that's great. And in the long run, of course, if you think about a car paying $100 to $200 a month for the full service, full self-driving service, and a car that you buy $35,000 upfront, to cut it short, between 50 and 75% of your profits over the life cycle of the car are going to come from the software subscription. So in the very long run, it's a very important driver of value creation. But in the near term, what I think is that this game of giving away FSD to 1,000 more chaps and building up, you know, safety, giving it only to people who are like maniac about safety and things like that, it is going to last for a long time, probably for years. So I don't expect, you know, my Tesla to go and pick up my kids anytime soon. But I do expect that in 10 years from now, the Tesla will be still like the most profitable car maker, thanks to these efforts. Now, on the software front and on like the car as a system and like car as like a data rich system front, what I find very interesting today and what I think can make much more of a difference over the next 2-3 years is actually the insurance opportunity. And I can take you through real quick high level math on that if you want. So if you take
I want that, Pierre. Absolutely.
if you take like a non-Tesla driver versus a Tesla driver who is not using autopilot, you already have about a 2x safety factor. So like the risk of accidents is twice lower for the Tesla driver. It's pretty good. And 2x, I'm being generous. I could argue 3x. If you take a Tesla driver who is using autopilot and active safety, it becomes almost 10x, 8x safer. And if you take a moron like me trying to improve his safety score, I don't know yet, but it's probably another 2x. So that becomes 20 times safer. Okay, so when you pay your insurance premium for your car today, basically 75% of the money you pay goes into financing the cost of risk. So that's the cost of the risk of you having an expensive accident. And 20%, 15 to 20% of the money, 15 to 20% of the money goes into underwriting, managing the mess and insurance companies, and 5 to 10% is operating profits for the insurance business. So the cost of risk, if you sell insurance only to maniacs using the safety score and trying to improve it, is divided by 20. So 75% of the cost of your insurance is divided by 20. So let's say you want to keep half that profit for you and give half that profit as a cost reduction to your client. That means you can have an insurance premium in which the cost of risk, including your margin, instead of being 75, becomes 7.5. So you've more than half the cost of your insurance. Okay? And you make a monster profit already because half that cost is actually your profit. And then imagine Tesla building out its own infrastructure to sell insurance products, to underwrite them, look at how they do leasing and things like that. They will be almost an order of magnitude cheaper than an insurance company with its legacy. That's the way it is, you know, that's the principle of fintech. If you do a bank purely based on web services and compute and computers and all from a blank sheet of paper, you do things 10 times cheaper. So the 15 to 20% is also going to decline by maybe not an order of magnitude, but by 60, 80%. So Tesla will be in a position to sell an insurance, to sell you an insurance premium, underwrite for you an insurance premium that will be maybe half what another company would charge you, mostly because they know your risk profile. And by doing that, they will actually generate profits on that will be probably 50% instead of 10%. That's pretty cool. That's pretty competitive. And now this is just the beginning of the story. Because now imagine what happens if all the nice maniac drivers go into the safety score thing, the insurance, and they learn, by the way, through the system at how to drive safely. Because the most fun of that story is that now when I speed on the highway, I still have 100% score on that trip because speeding is okay. But it's all about like distance with other cars, always over-anticipating the need to brake. And it's very, very smart. So these people are going to learn to drive safely. And the people who are not going to buy that to have their insurance cost are going to be the people who are dangerous. And so the 20x gap is actually only going to widen. And it's going to be more and more expensive to insure yourself outside of Tesla. It's going to become more and more expensive to own a car that is not a Tesla until other car manufacturers can develop the same kind of capabilities. But how do you develop the same kind of capabilities if you're BMW, if you're Mercedes, if you, and it's going, they're going to realize that in 10 years from now, it's going to be very, very difficult to catch up. And so this is like a virtuous circle and a vicious circle for others that starts with this insurance business. And so in terms of direct impact, you know, on your bottom line, so if you assume Tesla sales, let's say, insures a Model 3 for, you know, maybe $70 a month, so that would, let's say, $1,000 a year, to make it simple, that's an additional $500 of profit a year. That's over 10 years, that's $5,000 versus gross profit on the car of maybe $7,500. So like two-thirds of the profit of your car are still to come through the insurance business. So it's a massive enhancer of profits, similar to FSD, actually. FSD is pure profit, but FSD might sell for less than $1,000 a year. So it might be that insurance is actually even more valuable than FSD. And what I like here is that that story is going to take off much more rapidly, I think, than FSD as a contributor to the bottom line. I think in 2-3 years from now, we'll see very significant contribution to the profit potential of Tesla. And then the feedback loop, which is going to be, well, in life, you have to choose between driving a Tesla, being very safe, paying a very cheap insurance, or driving another car and being part of like the dangerous people on the road. And like the insurance that costs today, let's say $1,800, so Tesla can do the same for, let's say, $900. But as Tesla keeps selling this $900, it's increasing the price of the other insurance. You see what I mean? So the $1,800 is going to become like $3,000. So it's going to become like economically unviable not to buy a Tesla.
Exactly. So because what you're saying is
I hope the strategy guys at BMW and others are listening to me, because they better get working on it now, or they are like really, really in trouble.
Yeah. I don't think BMW is listening, but basically what you're saying I think what you're saying, just to kind of recap that, you're basically saying that Tesla would be filtering out the best pool of drivers that are the cheapest to insure, that are subsidizing everybody else. That's what Elon has kind of said. And because of that, they're no longer subsidizing the other auto insurance companies. So they're just picking from a pool of less safe drivers, which then by default raises the premium and widens the gap between others and Tesla. So it's sort of like a virtuous forcing function towards Tesla vehicles.
Yeah. And it's even more vicious than that, in a sense that I don't believe like there are good drivers and bad drivers. Anybody could be a good driver or a bad driver. But when you see that when you have a Tesla and you pay attention to your safety score, you become a good driver. A lot of people will want to do that. So it's going to make it even worse, because individuals, the way they are being framed as good and bad by the old insurance system that is terrible, is going to become obsolete, because a bad driver is going to become a good driver with Tesla and with a safety score.
Yeah.
That's my personal experience of it. I think I'm much safer now.
Right.
Driving like a moron.
Well, I think I don't know if this is a real statistic. I know people, you know, a lot of statistics are just made up, but I've heard, you know, 90% of people or something like that, if you ask them if they're better than average as a driver, they'll say that they are, which is obviously statistically impossible. So yeah, your point there, it's like it's teaching people that maybe don't realize that, oh, like the minimum distance I should have between vehicles just for being safe is X amount. And just because of the safety score forcing them to do that, they'll adopt those habits over time and become safer drivers as a default from that forcing function.
Yeah. And maybe let me share one last thought on that. It's how clever the system Tesla came up with so rapidly. Because you can bet that in any other organization in the world, being at the government organization managing road safety, or any other car manufacturers, yes, people would have looked at distance of safety, but they would have looked at speed. They would have looked at whether you stop at a stop sign, whether you stop at a traffic light, that kind of, you know, policy-driven mindset. The Tesla app is doing the exact opposite. It's looking at whether you need to brake suddenly. It's looking at whether you lose attention while you are on autopilot. It's looking at whether you're taking hard turns. How could you think that taking slower turns would make you a safer driver? It's not that intuitive. But after experimenting it personally, I realized actually, if you put yourself in a position to always take a slow turn, to always have a safety distance, and to never have to brake, then I see my probability of having a crash like being divided by 10 without any issue. And so it's like the system is so much. And of course, these things cannot be enforced by law. So you cannot have a rule that says take a slow turn. No, the law has to be stop at the stop sign and stop at the traffic light and don't speed. But in a world in which everybody takes slow turn, nobody brakes in emergency, etc., everybody respects safety distances, then everybody can speed. That's okay. So that's fairly, it's going to be like, wow, it's very, very exciting. It's really going to change very, very profoundly the way we drive around. And it's going to be very interesting. Yeah. I'm as excited as Zach about the topic.
Well, as a perfect pairing, you asking the question and Zach answering on the Q3 call is a great, great highlight from the call. And yeah, as you're saying, that's just like the data torrent or data lake that you mentioned earlier. It's, you know, Tesla's just taking what the data is showing them and building a model around it. And that's just, you know, leading to safer driving. It's almost inarguable that's going to work. So, and I tend to agree, like Tesla insurance has so much potential and is something that is much, much closer to being solved than FSD. I'm a little bit more bullish on FSD than you are, but even still, Tesla insurance, like the foundation is already, the foundation, like all of it is basically built. It just needs to, they need to get through like the regulators, like they talked about. So, the immediate impact from that is very exciting. I agree.
Yeah, that's exactly like when you look at the road ahead for FSD, it's like the service is not like is going to remain like a nice to have feature to drive around with you being on the wheel and being ready to jump in a split second for now, and that may be going to become a second, and then it's going to become a few seconds, and in a long time it's going to become maybe you'll have like a few tenths of a second, which means you can maybe read a book. But we are still very, very, very far from that. And I know Elon tends to have that kind of like, he's like, you know, extrapolating the pace of progress so far into the future. But I'm not I don't consider I have strong evidence that this extrapolation is warranted. I think like, moving from a split second to a second, I think is going to be very, very, very painful, very difficult, require a lot of volume. And so in the meantime, the whole thing is money-making. So I can only applaud it. And they're investing in the computer and they're investing in the team, and et cetera. But I wouldn't feel like I missed it if the thing takes off and becomes amazing in 6 months. I just feel that today there is absolutely no way we can have any confidence in that. Whereas for the Tesla insurance, to me, it's just a question of registering an insurance company in every state and things like that. It's like getting the last innings of the 4680 going. It's very, very de-risk and very easy. And there was another thing I wanted to say on that. But I think I forgot, so maybe it will come back.
Well, I did want to ask just like what sort of conversations are coming up right now from more of an institutional perspective. It's always kind of interesting for retailers to hear about, you know, what the hot topics are. And obviously, I'm sure there's been a lot of conversation since the earnings report.
You mean amongst institutional investors?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think the institutional investors are always... like very, very sharp stock movements like that always get them a bit scared, because they have this kind of like more like overall perspective, and like they don't like things, you know, getting off like the distribution of possible outcome, which is their job. It's very normal. So I think there are a lot of conversations about all what is going to be an input into valuation. So near-term earnings momentum, the institutional investors understand well that the decision on whether you remain exposed to Tesla or your tech profits today is about how you feel about the ability of the company to surprise positively expectations in the next 2-3 quarters. So there is a lot happening there. And at the same time, as a long-term picture is very important to sustain multiples and things like that. I mean, this conversation we're having today is very similar to a conversation I will have with institutional investors these days.
Okay. That makes sense. And then last time we had talked, we were kind of thinking about 2021 and how the volume might come in. And at that point you'd ask Elon on probably the Q4, the Q3 call last year about, you know, volume targets for this year. And you had some insight from one of the companies you cover, the name escapes me right now, but that supplies Tesla with some chips. And so I guess the essence of my question is, what are you seeing in like the supply chain right now and any other insights like that for kind of as we head into next year?
Mm-hmm. So it's a good question. Yes, the company you refer to is STMicro, who supplies Tesla with like the silicon carbide chips you need in the inverter. And so based on their numbers and based on that conversation with Elon, my view was actually Tesla is shaping up to be able to do 1 million cars this year. And they're going to be they've exited Q3 with like 1 million car run rate. So even if the number at the end of the year is going to be 13-14% below 1 million, in terms of executions, they're very close to, you know, when you ramp, your slope has a huge impact on your average of the previous period, of course. So I think they're doing very well. And I would say it's probably, you know, the opening of Berlin is probably going to be 3 months too late for them to be able to book a year with 1 million. And that was difficult to anticipate, of course, a year ago. And the other one is that I think that, like, the production ramp, especially for SNX, have been hampered, of course, by supply constraints. So between these two things, that could be like the 140,000 units missing on that bullish expectation. For the next year, well, Rob, we are still on track to see a first car produced in Austin and a first car produced in Berlin before the end of the year. So worst case, it's going to be early next year, and it's not going to be like in June. So next year is going to be a year of ramping 2 more production sites, knowing that Tesla has like 2 basically relatively mature production sites. So next year is going to be a year where Tesla is on a journey to double production capacity. And it's not like breaking ground and waiting a year and then risking to lose 3 months or 6 months. It's like it's going to be week by week, production is going to increase. It's going to happen in a very challenging environment. But that's basically my answer to your question. If you give them the credit to be able to ramp like production over, a year or a bit more than a year, they should be actually at a 2 million run rate at some point relatively early in the year after next. So yeah, that's pretty cool. And by the time we get there, they're probably going to have broken ground somewhere else. It becomes like very, it's always easier, you know, to grow the next 50% as long as you have insane, largely exceeding your production capacity, which I think is still the case for a very, very long period of time.
Yeah. That's kind of how I'm thinking about it too, is I don't necessarily care too much about how next year comes in, just like I didn't really care too much about how this year came in from like the final number perspective. It's more about just the capacity that is being brought online. And as you said,
yes, exactly.
It's pretty clear that that's going to be 2 million plus. within the next year. And right now, you know, we're just getting off the first half of this year being like a 600,000, 700,000 vehicle run rate. Then 18 months later, it's going to be 2 million. So, it's very exciting to see that. And
exactly.
Like and you it's said, very good to see more factories after that, hopefully.
Yeah. And it's very good to see that this is also how the stock is now behaving. So like the market bias towards the stock is now much more forward looking than it was a few years ago. Like nobody cares that Tesla missed like the 1 million, you know, unofficial target that emerged from a conversation on an earnings call between an analyst and Elon Musk. People care about the current run rate, which means the current run rate is about what's happening next. And you see that when Zach said on the call, we exited the quarter with like a 250,000 unit run rate, you could see the stock like spiking up, moving up. They're getting there. So that's very, very good. The market is very positive on that story.
Yeah, that's great. Did you happen to remember the that other thought you had on Tesla insurance?
Nope. That's fine. We have other opportunities to catch up.
Yeah. That was a really good conversation. Is there anything else that you wanted to cover? I think that was most of the things I had on my list.
No. I'd just like to thank you and take the opportunity also to thank, you know, the Twitter community. It's a very, it's a bunch of great, great people in there. And I always love, your inputs. And I count some of you as almost active members of our research team, like some of the insights you bring in is very valuable. And I consider that a competitive advantage when I go to my institutional clients. So thank you, everybody, for following the work.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad to hear that. If you don't follow Pierre yet, you obviously should. It's P_Ferragu on Twitter.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks for joining us, Pierre. And hopefully we'll get another chance to talk soon.
Thanks. Bye.